You are listening to episode number 93 of the Secondary Science Simplified podcast. Y'all, we have made it to the end of August and thus the end of our classroom management series. We have covered so much over the course of this month. I hope you have loved it. If you have, please reach out, DM me on Instagram at its.not.rocket.science, or, you know, leave a review for the pod and let me know. I have loved talking about this topic with you guys. But before we wrap it up and we move on to our September theme, which is going to be all about different grading practices and all the things I have to say about that, I wanted to leave you with five super simple strategies that are incredibly effective. And I have personal experience using all five of these in my own secondary science classroom. And so I'm excited to tell you about them. Let's do this. This is Secondary Science Simplified, a podcast for secondary science teachers who want to engage their students and simplify their lives. I'm Rebecca Joyner from It's Not Rocket Science. As a high school science teacher turned curriculum writer, I am passionate about helping other science teachers love their jobs, serve their students, and do it all in only 40 hours a week. Are you ready to rock the time you spend in your classroom and actually have a life outside of it? You are in the right place, teacher friend. Let's get to today's episode. So these five strategies I have to share with you today are so simple, it almost feels silly to me to like put them in a podcast, but they are things that have been really helpful for me. And I get questions about classroom management all the time, and these are some of the solutions. So I want to put all of these together. So from now on, if anyone ever asks, I can be like, here are some of my five simplest strategies. But they've made such a big difference. So I'm going to share five things with you. And for each one, I'm going to tell you why I love them and then how to either use them or how it was helpful or how to implement. Okay, so first, I love seating charts. And here's why I love a seating chart. I just feel like you can reclaim so much control over your classroom dynamics and the personalities of your students if you utilize seating charts. Now, I originally started doing seating charts because at the beginning of the year, I like to put students in alphabetical order so I can learn their names faster. I've talked about this before, but I try to learn all of my students' names within one day of having them, bare minimum by the end of the week, first week of school. But typically, I can get them all down within a day or two. And seating charts help me do that because they sit in the same seat and I have a clipboard, which comes is coming. I'm going to talk to you about my clipboard in a second. But I have a clipboard and I have my seating chart on it and I can look at them and I can talk to them and I can see their name on the clipboard and see where they're seated. So I've always had lab tables or just like little desks, and I always take a little, you know, post-it note basically, or a piece of cardstock that I've laminated, and I have seats like 1A and 2A, 1B and 2B, and you know, whatever. And I have their seats are numbered and lettered. They all have a partner. Well, I guess I should have said 1A and 1B are next to each other. 2A and 2B are next to each other. But I put them in pairs and I have those numbers and I have my seating chart labeled. And so it's really helpful because then I can identify students really easily. So I always start off the year that way. And then here's how I really use them though throughout the year. As I get to know students, as IEPs and 504 documentation comes in and I see what students' needs are, as I see what kind of personalities and relational dynamics there are in my class, then the seating chart is like a game-changing tool for managing all of those different things in my classroom. And so what I do is I change seats at the end of every unit. I have around 7 to 10 units in each of my curricula. So, you know, anywhere from 3 to 5 per semester. So 3 to 5 times a semester, you're going to change your seat. And the way I do it is almost entirely random. So I use something called popsicle sticks, which we'll talk about in a second, that have every student's name on them. And I just draw sticks and that's how I pick their seats. So that kind of takes the pressure off. But essentially, as I'm doing that, I just kind of look. Like if I draw two names and I'm like, they cannot be together, then I just separate them. But in general, I'm letting kind of the randomness of it take over. And that takes a lot of the pressure off of me. And students think it's entirely random because I've made seating charts in front of them before. They can't quite see exactly how I'm manipulating it, but they can tell that I'm drawing sticks and that makes a difference. And then the other thing I can do then too is like, okay, let's say I draw two names and I'm like, okay, these names are fine to be together. you know, one of these students has an accommodation, I'm going to put them in the front row of the class as opposed to in the back row or whatever. And so I can manipulate where they're sitting there to serve every student and all of their accommodations that way. I love seating charts, you guys. All I have is like every classroom I've ever been in, I've gotten into PowerPoint and I've used little square shapes in PowerPoint and I've just made little desks in there. And then I make a little template and then I print it out and I make a bunch of them for the year and then I just write on it. And that's how I make the seating chart for at each unit. I make it while they're taking the test at the end of the unit. I make it for the next day when they'll have new seats. And I think it helps too to really change it up. Students tend to not like seating charts because they don't like being out of control and it puts you in control. But I think it really helps if they are not liking the person they're sitting next to know that like we're going to change at the end of the unit. So that kind of gives them some hope there. But I also think it's good too because it helps students get to know and talk to different students in the class. And to me personally, I'm thinking about all of the really shy and introverted students I've had in the past, that picking your own seat can be really traumatizing. I feel like seating charts kind of takes the pressure off. Like no one has control of where they sit. You're not the only one who doesn't have a friend to sit with. Like everyone has to sit where the teacher tells them. So I just think I find seating charts more loving towards the students. And so that's another reason why I do them. Love seating charts. Really helpful for managing the class, especially once you know who are the people who can't be near each other and you keep them as far apart as possible as you really can. Or there are times where I take the two kids that can't be near each other and I put them right next to each other and I put them right in front of my face so I can constantly keep a hand basically on their desk at all times to know that like I'm this close to you to keep you in line. So you can kind of take it in multiple ways there, but I love a seating chart. The second tool I love, which I already mentioned, is my clipboard. Okay, now this is so, again, these are all so simple, but I have always had a clipboard and it is like my ride or die. So what I have on this clipboard is for each class, I have a seating chart. And then behind that seating chart, I have a spreadsheet, essentially. All this spreadsheet is I've gone into Excel or Google Sheets, and I just put in all of the students' names in alphabetical order by last name in a column. And then I just make a bunch of tiny columns to the right of that. And then I print it out and I make a bunch of these for the year. And essentially, I have one at a time that's kind of like in there. It's behind their seating chart. And I use this to mark anything and everything. Okay, so this is where I keep track of like all of their grades. I do a lot of spot checking for completion, which we'll talk about in September with our grading practices series starting next week. I do a lot of that. And so I'm walking around my clipboard and I'm marking that there. So on like the top, I will put all of the names of the assignments and then I drop down their score there. Again, because if I'm doing completion, I mark like 10 out of 10 or 5 out of 10 or whatever. This also saves time. I love it. I like having an old school paper copy to refer to. And then I can type the grades all in really quickly at the end of the day into the computer. So that's up to date too. But I'm not having to be on my computer during class, which I don't like doing. I also like my clipboard because it's really helpful because if I'm going to collect something, I'm like, oh, so-and-so is absent. I make a note that they were absent. You can use whatever notation you want. I highlight the little square if someone was absent. So I remember like they're going to need more time or whatever. If someone's absent for an assignment that was like an in-class thing, I'm not going to have them make up. I go ahead and mark it exempt. I put an X there to know that I'm going to put an exempt in the grade book. If I'm collecting something and a student's there and they didn't bring it, I put a little red tally to say it marked that it's missing one day. Then the next day I know to look and I just can look at those few tallies and follow up with those few students. They don't have it. They get another tally. It's 2 days late. They do. I go ahead and grade it. Like I just think this clipboard is like my go-to. Like I carry it all the time. There's a fire drill. This comes with me. This is great too for subs because they have your clipboard, you know, right there. Clipboard is my ride or die. I love it. It's so helpful. You got your seating chart on it. You've got your grade sheet where you can mark things really easily. You can put notes. I always keep post-it notes near me. So sometimes I'll just slap a post-it note on there and say something or, you know, if we have a primetime bell ringer and I need to grade it, I'll have the little answers written on a post-it note. I'll stick it there and then I'll know I still need to do that before I go today. Love, love, love my clipboard. Third simple strategy is another thing I've already mentioned and that's popsicle sticks. Okay. So I bought a box of 1,000 popsicle sticks when I was student teaching, okay? And I still hadn't gone through all of them in my years teaching before I started staying home with my kids. Like that's how many popsicle sticks there were. But every year or every semester, whenever I have new classes, I make a little bag or a little cup, but typically it was just a plastic bag that I had a piece of like sticky tape to that I stuck to the side of my demo table at the front of the room. They're labeled by class period, and I put each student's name on a popsicle stick, and then I put it in the bag for that class period. And it's so simple, but I love popsicle sticks. I use them for everything. I already told you, I use them to make seating charts. I use them to make lab groups. I always draw lab groups randomly, and I draw them in front of my students so they know they're random. And I find it so helpful for eliminating drama and being, again, this is another way we're being proactive. We're proactively eliminating drama by them seeing you're not like forcing them to work with so-and-so, or it's not your fault. We called it in my class, they always said it was the fate of the bag. So if someone got, there were these two boys that always kept getting in the same lab group, but we'd all just laugh and say, fate of the bag, like Ms. Joyner didn't do it. I didn't rig it. You saw me, like it just kept happening. I can't do anything about it. I love using popsicle sticks for that. I also love popsicle sticks because I try to go through my bag of popsicle sticks minimum one time a class period, preferably twice, to make sure at least I'm talking to every student once in a class period. So I use these for everything. It's like, oh, I need someone to go grab this next door, draw a popsicle stick, you go get it. Or if I have a question and we're going over something, I grab the popsicle sticks to go over them. This also helps with that attitude problem when people are like, you're just picking on me, or you know, you only called on me because you thought I wasn't paying attention or whatever. It's like, no, fate of the bag. I drew your name, popsicle stick, out of the bag. You know I'm going to call on you. You know that you can't skate by this whole class period without ever talking to me. Like, I'm going to draw your name. I find it so helpful. Again, it just eliminates a lot of drama by leaving some things up to chance. And I really like that. I know some teachers, too, have done, like, where they will like write the name in one color on one side, another color on the other. And then they try to like, they flip them over and they try to go through them twice that way. That to me was just a little too complicated. I just write their name on it and then I take it out of the bag or out of the cup. And then once I've gone through it once, I put them back in. And there has been once or twice where a student has tried to throw away their popsicle stick, but I always catch them because we're always making groups for something. And then they end up not being in a group. And it's like, okay, well, you threw away your popsicle stick, so I want to make you another one. And here's the one thing I did threaten. When I've had this happen before, I say, if you try to come in here and take out your popsicle stick, I'm going to add a second popsicle stick for you. You're going to have two popsicle sticks. So I'm going to call on you twice as much. And the kids did not like that. So that kept them from stealing their popsicle sticks. So I highly recommend popsicle sticks. I use it for so much. All right. My fourth simple strategy for you is going to take a little bit more explanation, but it's worth it. This is an idea I originally got from one of my coworkers, Jamie Whitlock, who I interviewed back in episode 19, but it's called board points. And it has been so helpful. I think it's my probably greatest whole classroom management strategy I've ever used. And it's not even mine. It's Jamie's. And she probably got it from someone else too. So I don't even know where it originally came from. But essentially, my first year teaching, I was on a semester block schedule, 4 classes every day, 90 minutes. You switch classes, get new students in January. My first semester was so smooth. I was like, why was I worried about classroom management? This was a breeze. Like, I didn't need to read all those books. And, you know, it was not a big deal. Well, second semester rolled around and my fourth period class, second semester, my first year teaching, is a class I will never forget. They changed me. I was humbled, to say the least, okay? I had 32 freshmen in a general biology 1 class, and they were wild. And what was hardest was that I was their 4th class of 4 for the day. They'd already sat through 3 90-minute classes. They came to me at 1:15 in the afternoon, and I had them till 3:45. A lot of them came to me from lunch. It was like all of the factors that could make it difficult thrown together, plus their personalities. It was truly nuts. And I cannot still to this day believe I had 32 of them in 1 class. But anyway, needless to say, like I said, it was humbling. And I've just never had a group that challenged me more. And that was one of the things that I remember kind of venting to Jamie is like, it's not like it's just like 1 or 2 hard kids that I need to like nail down, or I just like, it's like everyone, like I have my back turned and every kid is going ham. And like, I cannot, how do I just punish the whole class? Like, I don't know what to do. You know, it's just so out of control. When 90% of the class feels out of control, what do I do? And they were so sneaky too. You know, the kids, like they just wait until there's no way you can pin it on one person. And it's so tricky. And I mean, it's just hard. And that's where Jamie was like, girl, you got to do board points. All right. So here's how it works. On your whiteboard, hence why it's called board points, you're going to put a little number for each class period. So like first period, second period, third period, fourth period, okay? You'd have a 1, 2, 3, 4 on your whiteboard. Then you'll have a little dash. And then at the start of each unit, you're just going to write a 5 next to each class period's number. Okay, so each class period resets at the start of a new unit back to 5. And then you just need a really simple bell at the front of your classroom. I will link a bell in the show notes, and I'll also link a blog post where I have pictures of this in my classroom so you can actually see what I'm talking about here. But here's the deal. Basically, if you have to ring your bell more than once to get your students' attention, or if you turn your back to write something on the whiteboard and someone starts being disruptive, or a small group, you know, throws something at you and you don't know who did it, you take away a board point. Okay? That's what you do. Anytime you cannot pin something on one student, you can't just discipline one student or two students. You don't know who to discipline, or it's so many of them you can't even count. You take away a board point. And you do this throughout the unit. It's all based on student behavior. They can also earn points back if they lost them. So that's an incentive. Sometimes I would be like, hey, we're going to do this independent partner work, you know, you and your neighbor, the next 10 minutes. If you guys can all do it and I don't hear one side conversation about prom or, you know, what you're having for lunch, I'll give you a board point back. Or, hey, if we get through this lab and no one breaks anything or eats anything or hurts anyone, we get a board point back. Okay. So you give them opportunities to earn things back. I never let the number go above 5 and I never let it drop below 0. Now, you're like, what does it mean? So on the last day of the unit, when you give your unit test or your project or whatever you're doing at the end of your unit, I would always then, when I did that, have a bonus question on the test that's relevant to the content, but still very manageable to answer. This is key. It can't be too hard or else they will not think it's even worth it. It's got to be something they can do. And then the number of board points that the students have on the last day of the unit represents how much the bonus question on their test will be worth for the entire class. So if on test day there's 5 board points, that bonus question is worth 5 points. If they have 1 board point, it's only worth 1 point, okay? Now, if they have 0 board points, it becomes a required question on the test, which they do not want to do because then the test becomes out of 105 instead of 100 and it's even more points. Okay, so this sounds like so simple, I know, but I cannot tell you how effective it was and how motivating it is for students. I have used this with so many different diverse groups of students and personality types and class types and combinations. Like by class types, I mean like I've used it with general classes and honors. I've used it with AP, like elective sciences versus required sciences, like so many different ones, and it has always worked. Now, it takes a little bit for them to realize it, especially if it's a rambunctious group. But once they kind of get used to it, they realize like, oh, like this is actually really, really helpful for me. I need this. And it really, that combination of the bell and the board points, I never had to raise my voice again. I never had to worry about like disciplining an entire class because it was such an easy way to do it. A couple little, you know, helpful notes. Again, make sure the bonus question isn't too challenging. If it's too hard, it's going to seem unattainable. And then they're like, why even try to have board points if we can't answer the question anyway? But if you make it too easy, then if it becomes a required question, it's like, what's the point then either? So kind of, you know, make it so it's definitely a manageable question. Now, a couple of things you can do if your school does not allow you to do bonus. One thing is you could basically let them have 5 free points on the test, but like the test can't go over 100. So for example, like if they got a 95 on the test, but they get the board points for the bonus question, they get 100. Or if they have 100 on the test and then they get the bonus question, they can't get 105. You just cap it at 100. It's almost like a replacement question. Another thing you can do is just figure out another type of reward that motivates them. You know, maybe your class is motivated by you baking for them. Or maybe the thing is like, hey, if you can have 5 board points by the end of the quarter, I'll drop one of your primetime scores, or I'll give you all a free, I'll like let y'all all have a free 0 in the grade book or something. You know, you can come up with other motivations to use the board points for, but I found that really, really effective. I also find it great when you have a sub. I tell my students before I'm out, if the sub leaves even one negative note in the report, I don't care what it says, it's a 0 when I come back. And on the flip side, if a sub leaves a positive report, I will always reset the board points back to 5. And there has been once or twice where a sub has literally written me a love letter about a class and told me how good they are. And I've given the class that already had 5 board points, I've pushed them up to 7. Like, I've done that a couple of times, but in general, it caps at 5. And so I find this a really helpful classroom management strategy, even from afar when you're not there, to use it with a sub. It's been really effective for me. Okay, so seating charts. We've talked about my clipboard, popsicle sticks, and board points. And then the last thing I want to talk to you about is the fridge. So I don't know if you've seen this on social media, but when I started teaching back in 2012, like, Pinterest was all the rage. And I don't even use Pinterest anymore, but I'm sure other people still do. And something that I saw on Pinterest and one of my actual in real life teacher friends did was something called the fridge. And basically, she had a poster of like a refrigerator in her classroom. And when students did something great or they got an awesome score or whatever, they got to put it on the fridge. And the idea and why I love it is it's a way to celebrate students in your classroom. And it's especially effective for those students who aren't necessarily getting celebrated at home. So like, they're not bringing home their biology quiz and having a parent put it on the fridge for them and celebrating like they got an A on their biology quiz or they got a B on this project, you know? And so the fridge is your opportunity to do that for students. So how I ended up doing it was I had a couple students that needed, you know, volunteer hours for, you know, National Merit Society or whatever it is. They're a National Honor Society. That's what I'm trying to say. Something like that. Or they even just, maybe they just wanted, you know, to rack up some volunteer hours for their college resumes. And I had them come in one summer while I was working in my classroom and I got permission from the school, but I let them paint a fridge on my wall, on my cinder block walls. It was so cute. I will find a picture of it and I'll post it on social media, but it was so cute. It was just a little gray and black fridge. It just looked like a fridge. And then I had these little mini neon post-it notes. And so if someone did something awesome in class, I'd put a post-it note on their desk and I'd say, put it on the fridge. They could write like, you know, I was helpful for so-and-so, or I got an A on this or whatever. And you can set the bar differently for different students. Like, I had some students that'd be like, hey, if you pass this, I want you to put your name on the fridge. Like, you don't even have to write like I passed it. You know, it can just be like, you put your name, you stick on the fridge, you and I both know what you did and we're going to be proud of it. And it's so fun. By like the end of the year, it's just covered with post-it notes and kids love walking by and seeing it. And it was just a really, really sweet way to celebrate students and do it really simply. And obviously, if you have like an actual refrigerator in your class, you could use that. But I think the painted one on the wall was just fun. And it was something really memorable for students. And I genuinely think there are some of those kids that are always going to remember that we did that. And that was a special memory in our class. So highly recommend the fridge. Okay, that's it. That's our classroom management series. Your action step this week is just to choose one of these to set up. So either set up some seating charts, go ahead and like make a little diagram in PowerPoint that you can use even if your school year hasn't started yet. Get yourself your clipboard and make your little spreadsheet you can use. Write out some popsicle sticks with all your students' names on them. Go ahead and put some board points on the corner of your whiteboard and explain it to your students and get started with that. Or see if anyone wants to stay after school with you, you know, this week or once your school year starts if it hasn't yet, and get you a fridge on your wall. And use that so you can use the fridge strategy. I guess that's it. That's all I have for you. This has been so fun and I'm even more excited. I can't believe it for next week. We're going to start our new series on grading practices and I'm going to share all my best advice next month for how to grade effectively with minimal time required by you. So stay tuned. You can find any of these links that I mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/episode93. And if you enjoyed this classroom management series, I would love if you would take 1 second and leave a rating and a review for the pod before you go and let me know how much you enjoyed this series. It would mean so much to me. Can't wait to hear from you. All right, teacher friends, that wraps up today's episode. If you're looking for an easy way to start simplifying your life as a secondary science teacher, head to itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/challenge to grab your classroom reset challenge. And guess what? It's totally free. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll see you here next week. Until then, I'll be rooting for you, teacher friend.